Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
South African Gemma Marinus is a visionary in creative education and leadership, with over 25 years of experience transforming young lives through the performing arts. Founder and principal of Stageworks School of Performing Arts, Gemma is renowned for her holistic, customized approach to youth development. Through the Gemma Marinus Creative Consultancy, she works with creative graduates to turn ideas into action, supporting them in building viable businesses by applying core business principles without compromising their artistic identity. While she began her journey on global stages in productions like Mamma Mia, Hairspray, and Jesus Christ Superstar, today Gemma's greatest standing ovation comes from the impact she makes as a mentor, educator, and advocate for creative youth. She has partnered with the South African government on inclusive projects such as Shine Digital, and continues to uplift youth through Born to Perform, returning to the teatro in 2025. Gemma's passion is clear: to inspire creative youth, build sustainable careers, and reimagine education for the future. Up next on Celeb Savant, live in studio at Soligal Podcast in Johannesburg, South Africa, discussing her journey and Born to Perform 2025 is Gemma Marinus. And with me today, we've got Gemma Marinus.
Hello.
Lovely to have you here on the interviewee seat. Thank you for joining us. Now, let's dive straight in. You've had a variety of different iterations in the creative world.
Yeah.
So let's start at the beginning. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be on this path? And how did that journey progress?
Wow. Okay. We're going all the way back there. Ooh, all the way back. Okay. Yeah. I was always a very creative kid. I definitely was like the oddball of the family that would walk into a shopping center and just burst out singing a song that I knew on the radio. And then my mum would be like trying to drag me out of the shopping center, you know, embarrassed. But I refused to leave until the song was finished and I had finished my solo in the middle of the shopping center. And I think that was an indication. And that was at like five. So that was early, because I'm originally from the UK. So that was very, very early on. And then from there, I was very blessed that my family, they were actually brought up on a holiday camp. So they were actually brought up, originally from Canvey Island in Essex. So my whole family originated on a kind of entertainment holiday camp. So I was always around karaoke bars and entertainment from like a super young age. None of my family were performers though. And then as I grew into my teens, it was just something that I always wanted to do, in regards to singing mainly was the first thing. And I would write letters to like for auditions or to local radio stations and to ask them to please interview me and put me on there and, you know, to try and I used to put little hearts, you know, on there so that my letter stood out. So I was very invested from a really young age. And then I think when I got to my teens, my dad passed away when I was very small, so it was really just me and my mum. And I think you'll hear that from a lot of creatives, because I think a lot of creatives move into the space when they're trying to escape from something or trying to find things in their life somewhere else. And I think that was it for me as well. But it became my place of safety, I think, being on the stage and singing and writing and immersing myself in the creative world. That's what it was. And then I fell in love with musical theatre. I was very lucky to go and watch the first original cast of Les Miserables and then completely fell in love with that space as well. Then as a teenager, to make extra money for my dance lessons, I worked on the holiday camp in the 6 weeks holidays that we had in the UK. So from the age of about 13, 14, I was working like 10 hours a day in the 6 weeks holidays, but doing fun stuff. Like we were putting together cabaret shows for the kids' entertainment and entertaining the kids. So from a really early age, I was really involved in that. Had to be very self-sustainable from an early age as well to be able to fund going to performing arts classes and dance classes, and, you know, because it really was just me, my mum, and my nan. At the time, I lived with my nan as well. And then I realised this is what I wanted to do with my life. When I was at school, it wasn't seen as, and I think it's still pretty much the same now, it wasn't really seen as a career and something that it's like fun, something you do on the side, you know. At the end of when I finished school, I left school at 16 because at that time you could. I did my GCSEs at 16 and then I said I wanted to go to Performing Arts College. During that period of time, I'd already done quite a lot in the professional space as a young teenager in the UK. I'd been on the Barrymore Show and a variety of TV shows and done a whole bunch of stuff in theatre anyway, the London Palladium and Her Majesty's Theatre. And so from an early age, I was like, very much involved in it all. And then I wanted to go to Performing Arts College, but unfortunately we didn't have the funds for me to be able to go to the places that I wanted to go. So I was convinced to go and study law, psychology and media for a while. That didn't go too well. I think I lasted about a year and then I was like, I can't, I want to be on stage. So then I carried on auditioning from there. I was about, must have been about 17 going on 18 at the time. I managed to form part of a Spice Girls tribute band and I toured the clubs as Baby Spice around London then. And then it's almost like the universe put me back on the path where I was supposed to be, and there was an audition for a scholarship for a performing arts college that I desperately wanted to go to, and they were offering a scholarship for one girl and one boy, and I was lucky enough to get it. And then I went to study there for 3 years. And that's where I also found my love for teaching at the same time, because part of the deal of my scholarship was that once I had kind of worked my way up and had my teaching qualifications, that I would teach as part of the part-time school there to kind of give back. And it was the best thing that I could have done, because that's when I fell in love with teaching as well as performing and realized that I loved both. Then I left college. I did a variety of things. I did the Jerry Halliwell It's Raining Men music video.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did some backing dancing for Robbie Williams, all that lovely stuff. And then I went on a cruise ship. I then auditioned for the Buddy Holly show, which then brought me to South Africa. My intention was that I was always going to go back home. But after coming over here, this was, what was this now? This must have been about 26 years ago now. Mm. And then after coming over here, I then completely fell in love with the country.
As we all do.
Yeah, and stayed. And then it was my nan, bless her, was 82 at the time. She's a Cockney lady. So she was like, well, if Gemma's not coming home, then I'm going to go to South Africa. So much to the dismay of the rest of my family in the UK, she packed her bags and moved to South Africa.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, at the age of 82, and joined us here. And then my career carried on here. I did a variety of musicals while I was this side. Jesus Christ Superstar, Mamma Mia, The Full Monty, a whole bunch of stuff, and toured. And then realized that the last show that I did was Mamma Mia. That was in 2010. And then I realized that I was actually enjoying, because I always taught on the side. So it was always something that I had a passion for. And at that point, I decided that I was enjoying teaching more than being on stage. There's a moment that happens, I think, with a lot of performers where you kind of go through these phases. So as a kid, it's your immersive world that you get lost in it, and it becomes your safe space, right? So it's the place where you go to kind of either escape or just feel at one with yourself, I would say. And then it becomes a job. So then after that's happened, then it's like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. But then when you start doing it for the rest of your life, then it becomes your everything. So it then becomes the way that you make money, the way you have to feed yourself, the way you have to feed your family. And so there's other pressures that then come with that. And the love that sometimes was there at the very beginning can dissipate when you're in that and it becomes a job. The reason why you were doing it in the first place, you know, your safe space, your happy place, your place for escapism, that you can forget that when you're in that. And I think that started to happen to me. And when that cycle happens, I decided I was really enjoying the teaching more than what I was the performing. When you walk on stage and you're not feeling that, like, and so I took a step back from performing completely and then focused on opening Stageworks, which is the performing arts school. from there, it started in my house. So it was me. I'd met Matt at that time as well. And it started in my house with just me and Matt and me teaching. And then eventually it took over the whole of my house. And then my neighbors started to complain about the singing that was happening next door.
It's a free concert. Why complain?
Right? That's what I was like. It was beautiful singing as well.
Exactly.
Then that was the push for us to move out of the house and move to the building that we're now at. That must have been in, that was 2015. So I was 5 years at the house. Then I hired teachers and a team. And the essence of StageWorks, I think, was a little bit different from how one would perceive normal, when I say normal performing arts schools, what people perceive of performing arts schools. It was more than just, and I say just, but it was more than training people for a career in the arts. It really was, I wanted to create the space that I wish I'd had and the space that I was blessed to have had later when I was at college, but a space for kids that, yeah, that maybe didn't fit in school so much, or that wanted that escapism, needed to find community, were creative kids, creative thinkers, where they could thrive, figure out who they were, have a place that they just loved to perform and do what they did. And but also as well training people and giving them advice and career advice on how to take moves into if they wanted this to be a career and what to do. It really exploded. And my philosophy was always to be as diversified as possible. Being in the industry for so long myself and having to be completely self-reliant financially, it was really a case of understanding that it wasn't enough to just study musical theatre. You've got to study musical theatre and you've got to do promotions and you've got to know how to now, you've got to know how to do content. You've got to know how to do marketing. You, if you can write songs, fabulous. You know, if you can also be an artist, great. Mm. So I started to see how all of these creative endeavors all speak to each other and start linking. And that's actually what makes one sustainable as a creative. You'll find very few creatives that are just actors or that are just one thing. They're actors, maybe from this time to this time, and mm-hmm. then they are now doing this from this time to this yeah. time, you know. And I think people forget that, and I think there's a little bit of a glorified view of what being a performer is, and people don't necessarily see behind the curtain of what's happening behind that. The big thing for me was stripping down the curtain for these young people and going, okay, if you are serious and you want to do this, then let's look at it not just for the round of applause and for mm-hmm. the getting on stage and the standing ovations and the glorified view of fame. If you want to do this for the rest of your life because you love it so much, then let's try and find a way of doing this where you can be financially stable,
yeah.
where you have all the skills that you need to be able to do it, and where you are not reliant on the external industry. Yeah. You're not waiting for the phone to ring from your agent for a job, you know, because then you're relying on other people finding you work and you're not trying to find work yourself. So the school was kind of built on those philosophies. And then I realized we needed a vessel to impart that knowledge a little bit more, to showcase these young people, and to also build more into the ethos of what we were trying to express as a school. And that's when Born to Perform was born from there. So I decided with Matt, I was like, there needs to be something more for these kids. You know, coming from the UK, we're very used to there being lots of opportunities to be able to have a professional experience in the arts. And what it does, it allows you to realize whether you actually want to do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like an internship sort of.
Yeah. Whether you actually want to do this and you realize what goes into it, or whether it's more of something that you maybe don't want to do as a career, but you just want part of your life. You know, there's a big difference.
Exactly.
And that's integral. I mean, when you get to being a teenager, before a parent spend tons of money on sending their kids to, you know, arts colleges or studying the arts, they have to have these experiences because they often have this glorified view of mm-hmm. what it is. And it's only when they're spent all that money and that they go, actually, I don't know if this is actually what I want to do now. So we set up Born to Perform. We took the plunge and was like, okay, let's book a big theatre and let's put on a show where we have local celebrities that partner with the youth. My big thing was that I wanted kids from all backgrounds as well, because the major thing with South Africa, as we know, is we are very segregated in our communities in the arts, right? So within the arts itself, there's all these little siphons that are happening. But often there's no bridges between those siphons, and there's magical work that's happening in all these siphons, but no one's talking to each other.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right, in regards to understanding what the other person's doing and working cross-collaboratively. So I wanted to do that. So we had kids from local schools, schools that were doing really incredible things in the arts. We also had schools, choirs from local communities. We had kids from private schools, kids from government schools. We had kids from underprivileged areas and kids from privileged areas that were all coming together because they loved the arts. And then putting on a show that kind of epitomized the messages that we were trying to get across, which was the importance that the arts playing in young people's lives, whether you want a career or not. And also celebrating the talent that we have in South Africa and how actually, as an artistic community, we could all be doing more to be able to support these kids. So that was 2016 at the Lyric. We then had a phone call from the wonderful Brian Hill, who came to watch the show, who was like, would you like to bring this to the Teatro? We were like, yes, we would love to bring it to the Teatro. It was all very much a major risk because obviously it's hard financially putting something on at this scale.
Yeah.
I'm a true believer in just following your path and making sure that if you're doing things for the right reason and the right energy, it'll come to you, you know, and it did, and the show sold and we were all good. We then went to the Teatro. We then did another two shows. We collab with the Johannesburg Youth Orchestra as well. We did some digital stuff for the NAC. We did a young songwriters event for Music in Africa, which aired across the African continent. So it really was going really, really, really well. And then we got to 2019, did the Teatro, sold out performances for four nights, amazing reviews, and then COVID hit, which is the story I think of every performer's life. They all have like their COVID story, you know. And that then moved me to the next part of my life, I think, where I realized at that point the devastation that hit everybody, absolutely, any kind of freelancer, for sure. But I do think more so the artistic community and working artists, because they were left completely stranded. Theatres closed, film sets closed. And it's not something that you can do online. We're learning to now. Now we're learning to do the podcasting, the digital, the online stuff. But at that time, it wasn't a thing, you know. So we had friends that couldn't pay for their kids to go to school because suddenly there was no work at all. And so I sat with Matt one day. We were very blessed that with running the school, we had some very supportive parents that continued paying their fees that allowed us to kind of keep the school afloat during that period of time. And we were very blessed to get some funding from the NAC as well to help pay all our teachers and keep everyone afloat. And that was a blessing. And we were lucky that that happened. But watching everything else around us, I then went, I want to know how to fix this. This can't be the thing for performers. Like, we can't always have the sob story, right?
Yeah.
We can't always be dying on our sword. There has to be a way of being sustainable as an individual where you don't have to rely so much on the external industry. And how do we do that? And how do I teach that? How do I make sure that these performers that I'm training that are desperate to have a career in the arts don't end up that a COVID situation comes up and they lose everything they have? Because I feel responsible for that because I'm now training these people to go into this industry, right? That was when I then took on an MBA in educational leadership, more for the business side, to understand the business side and to try to link the business side to creativity and the creative endeavors. And then the educational leadership side in regards to how then to communicate that to a school environment and putting the philosophies in place for them to be able to learn those philosophies. And it was completely life-changing. It was doing that. It was hard. I went from just having GCSEs and no degree to studying a master's. That was like, yeah, that was really hard. Lots of sleepless nights and unhappy husbands and children that was like, no, I need to get my thesis done. But the knowledge that I got from that has driven now getting to the point where we are now with the show and what this show is now in my head, what we're planning to do with it from here as a catalyst for young people to not just be able to follow a career in the arts, but starting these siphons and these performances that make them independent artists mm-hmm. and allow them to be successful in their own right and also have the knowledge and expertise to be sustainable at the same time. And there is models around it where it can happen and how it can work. And so then I was 5 years away after doing The Last Born to Perform. We spent really building the school back up again after COVID, studying my MBA, coming up with wonderful plans and ideas of how we were going to start to just spread the word on the business behind the arts with our students in a way that isn't boring for them, you know, because as a teenager, when you want to sing and dance, you don't want to hear about business.
Yeah.
Doing your taxes and what all that means, right? Mm. So it was finding ways of communicating it to make it understandable for them. And then we got to our 15-year anniversary, which is this year, where StageWorx had been running for 15 years. And I said to Matt, I need to do something incredible because it's 15 years. You know, we need to celebrate that we've been functioning as a school for that amount of time and the successes that we've had that's, you know, from our grads and our teaching and, you know, the years that have gone into it. And then we met with Adam and Belinda Howard. So Adam and Belinda, their daughter Tabitha comes to StageWorx. So we've had a personal and a business relationship with them for years. They've been so incredible in like helping us with when we've had digital recordings that we've done. We did Shine Digital, which was like a full on movie. And they helped do all the audio side for us, you know. So we've always had that working relationship. They helped us with all of the musical design for our previous shows. But I have this fear, I think, of coming out of COVID and after the 2019 show of the financial risk of redeveloping something on that level again. I think a lot of people came out of what happened in that period and were a lot more, I'll say, less fearless.
Yeah,
you know. And so we were looking at smaller theatres and a barnyard and let's, and then we went to meet with Adam and Belinda. Then we were looking at the Lyric and then Adam was like, I've got dates at the Teatro. Why would we not go there? So after I had a mini panic attack in my chair going, are we really going to do this again? Then we were like, okay, no, this feels good. We're collabing. They are co-producing with us, mm-hmm. which helps. You know, we've not taken the whole strain yourself, which is amazing. And yeah, so we said, okay, let's do this thing again. Contacted Mr. Hill at Monte and Monte Cassino. Also, because of what we did in 2019, have waived the theatre hire for us, which is incredible because they also see the importance of this kind of thing happening, right? Especially for feeding the teatro, because the teatro hosts all these incredible shows, but it has to come from somewhere.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And so here we are from this thing taking place with 350 kids and two dogs in the show as well. So all the things you're not supposed to do, we are putting on one stage together, she says, smiling.
Okay. So now let's go back to StageWorx. So StageWorx, is it a school for kids, like grade one to matric?
It's everything. So, okay. So we've got three parts to the school. We have the part-time school, which is 7 years all the way up to 18 years.
Okay.
And then we have all sorts of classes for them. We've got vocals, musical theatre, drama, songwriting. We've even got StageWorx Media now, which is the content side and the editing and the content creation. Music production, music theory, if they want to take Trinity London College exams and they can, if they want to do RSL exams and they can. So it's really widespread. And the philosophy with the part-time school is I could get a child that sits in front of me that says, I want to do this as a career and I want to get there and there's nothing else I want to do with my life and I need you to make it happen. Of which then I can go, okay, this is what we need to do. You need to have this class, this class, this class, this class. What's your plan after school? Where are you going? And we plan that route for them. Or we have children that come in where the parents are like, we're struggling at school. I don't know what's going on. They're not concentrating. They need an outlet. And the arts is the best place for those kids to be. You know, generally creatives, they struggle in formal, logical school environments. Mm-hmm. But the minute you place them in a creative environment, they get rid of all of that excess energy, and they have a place where they feel that they belong, and they're not being told off all the time, and they're actually being positively enforced on the things that they get negatively told at school, right? It becomes their positive rather than the negative. Suddenly, you see that in their schoolwork and everything else that is taking place. So we also have those kids that don't want to do it as a career but are just looking for their people, or that are just looking for their place, or their place where this is something fun that I do on a Saturday and I can just breathe out life. So we've got like the different varieties there. Then we have post-matric, which is our accelerator course. That's the gap that I was talking about. That's for those that are going, I think I want to have a career. I think this is what I want to do. And then they come to us for a year, of which they then decide whether this is what I want to do, or, you know what, I just love performing, but I don't think I want to do this as a career.
Yeah.
And then we help bridge the gap from there. So some of them, like Marianthe Panis, she went over, studied at Arts Ed. She's just been in Starlight.
Yeah.
So some we help with placing into international unis. Some stay with us and carry on training on a part-time basis while they're auditioning and performing. Some choose to go and study degrees in education or degrees in psychology whilst they are still training in the arts and living their passion on that side. So I think, yeah, what we've set up, which is what I wanted, is for each child that comes to us to have their individual plan according to what they need and what they want to do, you know. And also it'd be okay for that plan to change. You know, and them to say,
life happens.
Yeah, I thought I wanted to do this, but actually now I don't.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's not the be all and end all of being a performer. You know, you can go and be an accountant or be a vet, or it's absolutely fine. And you can still have this part of your life, you know, and still access it. It doesn't mean you have to pick. Yeah, so that's the school. So it's those two parts.
Okay.
Post-matric and then the part-time school as well.
Do you miss ever being on stage?
That's a really hard question, because I miss singing. I'm really impatient, right? So I think it's my curse and my superpower at the same time, which is why my husband looks as grey as he does, because I have an idea and then it's like, we've got to do this now.
Yeah.
You know, and then all the steps, we need to do this and then this and then this and then this, and then we're gonna finish it in a year. So when I was performing, I used to love the process. I loved the rehearsals, and then I loved the opening night. But once the opening night was done, I felt like my job was done. And then we had to then carry on doing the show for another 3 to 6 months. And then I was like, okay. You know, so that was a part of it that I didn't really love as much. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I should be saying that, but no. It's true, right? Yeah. So I don't miss that part, but I miss playing characters and playing roles and singing, because singing was always my outlet. And it's funny because I give other people advice of like, well, why do you not do it? Like, why do you just sing, just record something, just do something? Yeah. But it is hard. It's really hard to make that transition when it's been your whole life and your career, and then it's not, for it to kind of be. Does that make sense? Like
be
half in. So I found that difficult. Being half in, like, and only just doing it because, but I do miss it.
Born to Perform.
Mm.
It's a 2-hour show. You said there are 350 kids, 2 dogs. So is it different scenes with different people on, and then another scene happens? What can you tell us?
All right. So what it is, we take different songs. So I'm going to give you an example. Our opening song is an original song that Matthew wrote called Shine, and it's all about shining your light and showing an audience, if you shine your light, then it allows everyone else to do the same. Mm-hmm. But it's done in a really cool, pop, funky way. So the students will perform that. We hold auditions, and then we basically build the show around what comes into the audition room. This one's slightly different because we're pulling from previous shows of what we've done. But for instance, we've got National School of the Arts that are doing Shadowlands. with John Sinoli, who's one of our grads, who's had an incredible music career. And then we have St. Vincent School of the Deaf that are signing a number to True Colours that we've got three lead vocalists singing and they're signing. Mm-hmm. And it's a variety show. So if you think about...
Sort of like a showcase.
Yeah. A showcase on steroids. Like, okay. It's, think about the original concept was the Royal Variety Show without the Queen for kids. Right?
Okay.
Because we don't have a Queen here. So it's the Royal Variety Show context in regards to these big professional numbers, celebration of everything that's happening in the industry, but it's performed by some of the best youth performers of our country rather than celebrity performers. So that's kind of that's what it is. And you come away feeling, I think the words from the previous show was like uplifted, inspired, looking at these kids going, wow, okay, they somehow get the world more than what we do sometimes, mm-hmm. you know? They're still in that phase of having the energy to fix things, mm-hmm. you know, which is really wonderful to see. And all of that comes across in the show. It's their words and their vision, but it's a variety show.
Yeah.
A fun, uplifting variety show with songs that everyone knows.
And because this show is going to be opening with Shine, everyone's going to be shining their light when they leave the auditorium.
That's the hope. Absolutely. Yeah, that's yes. the hope.
So how many participants or students do you have who think, okay, this is it, just the curtains, and then you strip away the curtains,
yeah.
and then there's social media, and then there's content, yeah. and then there's this, that, then, and the next thing. What percentage of them say, okay, well, I didn't realize that this would be part of it, and it's not really what I want to do?
It's really funny because you can tell the ones that are not going to move away from it straight away when they walk in the room. The ones that, and it's really hard to explain how you can see that, but you can. The ones that are in it will work 12 hours a day to do it, and they won't complain about it because they love it. They will be the ones that will, and I use this analogy because it's exactly what I had to do. So I was playing Eliza Doolittle. I was second to Angela Killian, and we were sharing the role. And I went from playing Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady to then after that show, having no money and having to dress up as a meerkat for Vodacom and walk through the shopping centre, right? So, so it's like, but the people that are in it, they will do that and exactly. they won't complain about it because they love what they're doing so much. And you can see that from an early age. You can see that they come into class and they just want to be there
yeah.
and they don't get tired. You can tell, but sometimes they have to realize that for themselves. Like, I'm not yeah. there to tell them, I don't think this is for you, but you can tell and then they will realize. But I don't think it's a case of one person being good enough and one person not being good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe you were either put on this planet to follow that path or you won't.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're put on that path to study the arts to discover something else. And that's just as important.
Oh, yes.
You know, mm-hmm. and you have to be in those environments to discover what that thing is.
Exactly.
And that for me, that job for me is just as important as it is finding the ones that want the career. The other side of it is just as important because otherwise they stay a little bit lost in not knowing where they're wanting to go.
For anyone who's listening, kids, teenagers, even older people may be thinking, oh, I would have loved to have done this and maybe wanting to go there and they're hesitant, they're resistant. Mm. What advice would you give them?
So someone that I listen a lot to and that I really, I think he's very wise. I know a lot of people won't agree with everything he says, so just forgive me. But Jordan Peterson has a statement that he makes is just do something. If you're doing something, one thing, you're moving forward towards where you want to be. Mm-hmm. So if you have a passion for singing or the arts or it's something that you wish you had done and that you never did, just start small and manageable and join one singing class a week because you never know where that one singing class a week is going to lead. And who you're going to meet. And then that leads to the next thing. So don't be overburdened. And this is something that I do in my business coaching with creatives as well. Because what happens is creatives have a million and one ideas and a million and one things they want to do, but they look at Z before they go from A to Z.
Yep.
So they're seeing the big idea at the end, right? So the person that feels like they never became a vocalist, they're seeing...
Singing at the Grammys.
Yeah, that's what they're seeing, right? But they're not seeing the joy that they would get by just stepping to A first, which is let me just start singing again.
Mm.
Let me just get in the room with a coach. Let me just find my people. Let me just do that first. Then let's see where that goes. And then let's build on that. And then let's build on that. And I think anyone, anyone that is a creative that is in that world, they can get lost in that middle part. And then sometimes they lose the direction because of that, you know, but just taking one step forward and then you never know what's going to happen from there.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Listen to your creative kids. Creativity is energetic, excitable, jumps in different directions, the out-the-box thinker, the freedom of life, I would say. All of those things is what creativity is. And sometimes I think when we become adults and we're wanting the best for our children, we try to push the logical onto them and then they start to dissipate and lose their creative side. So I think the big thing that I would say is appreciate creativity for what it is and take a step into that spotlight and allow your children to just be free for a few minutes a day, you know, and experience that, because I think people underestimate what that can bring to someone's life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.